This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea as to the meaning of the word?
Sup?
Yo.
I've been talking to some folks this week because we're hiring. And a couple of people I've talked to said that they know about Podia from our ramblings on here. So that was cool. Shout out to all you people who listen to this, because sometimes I like feel like we just like talking to the void, and it's, I don't know, it's very cool to hear people like, yeah, I listen to you guys talk every week.
Yeah, that is super, super awesome, because it's like doing screencasts. You just record something and publish it, and then you never talk to anyone who listened or watched it, and it feels strange when you find out someone actually did.
One of the interviews started with, have you had any more run-ins with the law? And I was like, oh, you listen to Remote Ruby.
I love it. Yeah,
an
I was
amazing
actually
first
just,
impression.
I was just trying to have a run-in with the law this week because I bought a car to restore and have to transfer the title, but it doesn't run. And I have to like go to the DMV and get a paper, a carbon copy of this form to sign, and then call the Missouri Highway Patrol and have someone come out to my house. Because
is this like, the one you bought in Atlanta, or is this another one?
Yeah.
Jeez, you're still dealing with that.
Yeah, just because like it's a huge pain and it's not that big of a priority because I like don't drive it. It doesn't run. So
right.
I've just finally figured out who I need to talk to, because originally it was like, I got to put it on a trailer and then go take it to get an inspection. But they can come to you, I guess. But, you know, like you make the phone call to the local police and they're like, oh, technically your house is in this other jurisdiction, so we'll transfer you there. And they do that, and then they're like, well, we don't do house calls, so we got to transfer you to somewhere else. And it was like 30 minutes of being transferred before I found out. And then, of course, they were like, yeah, we'll have somebody call you, and they never did. I don't know. Maybe it'll just never be technically my car. I just want to take a quick second to mention that our friends over at Spectora are hiring. They are hiring a full-stack Ruby on Rails developer. The company is 100% remote, and they're building the world's best home inspection software. Now, I went through that process a couple years ago, and I can tell you the software for that is pretty out of date. So it's awesome to see someone is tackling that, because it definitely crossed my mind as I was going and getting a home inspection that, hey, someone needs to build a better version of this. And Spectora is doing that. So they're using Ruby on Rails in the back end. They've got Vue.js and standard JavaScript on the front end. And they're using Flutter for their mobile app. They've got serverless and Lambda functions for offloading their jobs to a really scalable architecture. And they're deploying to Heroku. So they're doing all kinds of awesome stuff. And they're building a great product. They are hiring a full stack Ruby on Rails developer, like I mentioned. You get to work on challenging projects with a collaborative, passionate team. And the company is 100% employee owned, which is awesome. So they've been doubling in size each of the past 3 years, and they still believe they're on the ground floor of where we can go within the broader home services space. So there's a lot of work to be done, especially during the pandemic where home buying has been crazy. So if this sounds interesting to you, we'll have a link to the job posting so you can send in your resume and your application to Spectora, but you can also find them at spectora.com.
Positive news. I think I am eligible, and so is Shannon, for the vaccine.
Yay!
We are going, well, today is Friday, March 5th, and we are going Monday, March 8th to get our first dose.
Nice. I just got my first one, and our second is scheduled for the 23rd, I think.
That's badass that you can schedule in advance. This is relevant. Let's talk about how the city of Memphis schedules vaccines. There is a SaaS app that they use, just some company. You can probably find it. I have no qualms with the company. I have qualms with the city of Memphis for this. So my phase of the vaccine was announced this past Monday. They said, you'll be eligible next week and you can start scheduling your appointments on Friday at noon. Today, I was on a call with Jamie, my CTO, and I was like, oh, sorry, it's noon. We have to like hold on. This website is 503, service unavailable. And then like I got through and I saw like the appointment slots. I was like, click, schedule appointment. 503, refresh, 503, couldn't get back to the page. Spent 15 minutes, two private tabs. We have different locations. I was like, oh, I don't care. I'll go like 30 minutes away to get it. Finally got to where I could put my information in. I was like, oh yes, it's happening. Hit submit. No more times are available. Like in the slot you're trying to get, have to go back and go through this process again.
Oh man.
All that to say, I have to do the same thing in 2 weeks to get my second dose.
Really?
Yeah. They don't schedule them both at once.
Well, they didn't schedule our second one until we were at and completed our first one. You wait for 15 minutes after your first dose and then go talk to some lady and schedule our second one there and do it ahead of time.
I'm looking right now. They have a first dose appointments tab and a second dose appointments. And it looks like I can't even try to get second doses till the week of.
Oh, that's fun. That reminded me of, there was, what was it? Spark Fun may have been the place that would do like, they had basically like this thing where if you come to their website, they'll give you like a sort of like free credit or something. And they have $1 million they're going to give away. And so you can claim yours or whatever. And 1 year I spent like 45 minutes filling out CAPTCHAs trying to get $100 credit. And I like, you know, bought a Raspberry Pi kit or something with it. But it reminded me of that because it was like just normally the years before it was just 500 all the time, constantly. And then that year they were like, we'll just throw a CAPTCHA in there and slow people down. And it worked. And it was a pretty funny thing. I think I was in college. So I was like, I'm going to just spend 45 minutes filling out CAPTCHAs.
It's amazing I'm still employed because that's not the first time I've been on a meeting. And I'm like, hold on, boss. Like last time it was a PS5. Like we were in the middle of working. I was like, whoa, I just got a notification. PS5s are in stock. Got to try this. So I spent like 15 minutes refreshing Walmart's website.
That reminds me of Skyrim came out way back when, and one of my bosses lived in a different city. So he like didn't log in at all for a week and a half. And I did the same thing. I just stayed home and played Skyrim for a week and a half and never left the house. And I think the only time I left was like to walk down the street to Subway and back. And that was it. Everybody was like, where did you guys go? And we're like, Skyrim's out. What do you mean? It was nice to have a very flexible job like that at the time.
I mean, he was cool both times, but he was a little more understanding of me trying to get a COVID vaccine than get my PS5 ordered.
Right. Oh, those are good memories, though.
Y'all make me feel left out, but I am eligible on the 24th thanks to a technicality.
Okay.
Someone accidentally left the vaccine out and you ran by and grabbed some.
The state of North Carolina has introduced this incredibly arbitrary thing where if you have smoked at least 100 cigarettes in your life, in your entire life, you are eligible to get the vaccine on the 24th. No idea where the number came from. What's the difference between 180? No one knows. But all I know is that somewhere out there, someone is chain smoking in North Carolina.
Yeah. That was my first thought.
Yeah. This is like sponsored by the tobacco industry.
Oh yeah. Well, and we're a tobacco state, so that made it even more sus.
Oh my gosh. So
just incentivizing you to smoke. I'm like,
Pfizer vaccine sponsored by Marlboro. Like, I don't even know cigarette brands anymore.
Wow. Oh
my gosh. My eligibility is like, I'm considered a risk because of my size. And so Shannon is pregnant. So hers is another reason for her eligibility. I don't know. I'm not proud of that, but if I can get the vaccine and I'm legitimately eligible, I'm not taking it from someone else. I'm good with that.
Yeah. I don't feel great about it at all. But on the other hand, I'm going to feel a lot better when I'm walking around with a vaccine. So I really don't care.
There's still appointments available next week. It's not like I'm like taking them out of the hands of the others. We just all wanted to schedule it at noon today. I would not have thought a year and a half ago we'd be sitting here talking about racing to get vaccines. It's crazy.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, because it was last March was when things started to really lock down here and stuff. So it's been about a full year of being stuck at home.
Once we get vaccinated, we can get together again. We could hang out.
We could do a podcast in real life.
What?
Remember that time we podcasted? This was pre-Mason, when we recorded at Southeast Ruby in a hotel room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then the hallway track recorded to the last in-person Rails comp. I missed that.
I didn't realize how excited, until I realized I was eligible for that. See, I realized how excited I am, like, to get back to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You're going clubbing as soon as you possibly can. Just totally. Like the densest place with people.
Yeah. We'll be fully vaccinated for Shayna's birthday. She's pregnant. I'll be like, we got to go downtown. We got to go find where the people are. So,
yeah. Which
would probably mean we just end up at some church service, because that's apparently where all the crowds are here in Memphis.
Same.
Programming. Ruby.
Yes. I have a question.
Okay. Let's go.
And I know that this is not good. This is a dumb question. I'm just going to say it. But because I have both of you here, and it doesn't matter, I don't care. I have two different sets of records, right? That are both scoped. So let's say a book and a periodical. Those are pretty similar, right?
Okay.
No?
Sure.
They have very similar fields. There are very small differences. And I have two sets of these scoped active record relations, and I want them to be one so that I can then chain queries after that. But if I try to merge them, it tries to make them one type of record, and I don't want that. And I can't chain active record queries onto an array. So how do I make this happen?
Are you making the sales pitch for delegated types? Because that's,
am
that's
I?
Basically it. Yeah. So
I guess I am. Google, Google, Google.
So that was like a feature of Rails that was recently announced. And I was like, you know, everybody's talking about delegated types is really cool. And I am like, but I don't get it. It just seems like polymorphic relationships with an extra table there, the main table that you query. And that's it. If you open up the source code for delegated types, it's 30 lines of code, and it's, we'll define it belongs to polymorphic. And a couple helper methods based on the, if you add books and periodicals, then we have a books method and a periodicals method. And then you'll have whatever you want to write your main model that you would query. I don't know. Whatever.
They have a status.
Yeah.
Like, so like imprint or not imprint, for example.
So like, what would the generic name for a book or a periodical be?
Like a resource.
Okay, resource. Basically,
sure that won't conflict.
Yeah, I know, right?
Basically, you would create a resource model that's polymorphic, and then you create your books model and your periodicals table and your models for those, and put anything unique on there and anything shared on the resource or bookable model or whatever you want to call it. And that's it. So, like, you can add your extra data into these other tables, but you have one table that you query. And then it's associated to the other records. So you end up working at this singular resource, the resource or bookable or whatever the heck you want to call it. That's like the main source of truth. And you just store extra data in these other columns. That's nothing new. So delegated right. types is nothing fancy at all. It's just got a little bit of syntactic sugar on top of a polymorphic relationship. So I've been doing that before. Imagine notifications or events. Like, if you want to do a timeline of activity, you're like an event. And then each one of those points to a different record. Andrew posted or archived 900 different GitHub repos and created other ones and moved them around. But you'd have all these events that point to these other objects, and that's it. So it's pretty simple, but would do exactly what you need.
That use case is exactly what I did in the app Andrea and I are building, like the incident, like event system.
Yeah.
I used delegated types for that. And it was chef's kiss, because we may lose listeners over this, but I'm a fan of the single table inheritance. We use that at work, and I think it's really powerful, but it was not a good fit for this. Right. The problem with that is you end up with these JSON. For us to make it expandable, we end up with JSON B columns that are like catch-alls for all the different types of content a child could have. So delegated types, perfect.
And that's really like the two main use cases that I know of. That's, you have the one that is the sort of like event stream And that's like where it came from Basecamp, I think, because they have that history of activity. And then the other ones are a replacement for STI, where like you would put that all in one model or something, or you do queries across two models, which gets really hard to merge and things like that. So it's really the same problem with two different lenses, right? It's pretty cool to see that. I was having a hard time wrapping my head around it until I opened up the source code at GitHub and I was like, it's literally, it belongs to polymorphic. And I was like, that's it. Now I understand it. It clicks.
I'm curious, Andrew, are you in a place where you can implement something like that, or are you?
Absolutely not.
So,
So I know exactly what's going to happen. I just like would like there to be a different way where I'm going to like scope down the queries and I'm just going to have extra queries and then I'm going to join them into an array at the very end and render them. But I want to be able to take like these two scopes and then chain on top of that.
But they're two different models though, right?
Yeah. I feel like this should be a thing. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know how it could be.
You'd have to select across two tables and then also include like the table name in there so that it could be mapped to the right Ruby objects and stuff. So
yeah. Okay. Well, why I thought this would be a thing is that the chain that I need to add on to the end of it is only one column and it's a column they both share that I want to be the same. So like I'm going to use the delegated type example because it's way better. They have a message and comment and they're both entries. Oh. So I have a message and the status is delivered and I have comments and the status is, I guess, posted would probably be better, posted or whatever. They have a status and I want to take these two scopes and just query off, hey, I only want the records that are in this status and they both have a status column.
Could you build that query for both of them before you do the merge?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I can do that. And then that's just going to be extra queries. I don't know. I was probably trying to optimize. I don't know why. I just thought it would be a thing. I don't know.
The pagination and stuff becomes a problem.
Right.
So that was one of the reasons for the sort of third table for delegated types. So you can paginate that and interact with just a single table in a sense. So yeah, the querying and then merging stuff doesn't work too bad. The search page on GoRails does that where it's you searched a term. So we're going to query the episodes table and the forum posts and then just display them both. I don't actually merge them into one list of results. I have two separate ones, but it's kind of the same concept where like
right. The
resulting page needs to display both. So
yeah, well, and that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I just thought I could do it. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'm only really adding one extra SQL call for another where instead of like one where.
Hopefully a few milliseconds at most.
Right. Yeah. You know? Okay.
Index that call.
I'm tripping over nothing.
Then it'd be good.
Guess I just thought, I don't know. I thought it was a thing, but this delegated types, I actually hadn't seen this. This is pretty cool. I actually, now that we've had this discussion, this totally makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's designed to solve that problem.
Well,
you would just have to add an extra table in there.
Yeah. But I was going to say the problem is that you would have to know you're going to encounter this problem and architect for that solution prior. Right. And I guarantee you most people are going to get down the road and then be like, oh, wait.
Yeah. And you could definitely backfill and stuff, but it's going to take some effort to like add that back in. So it is what it is. It's like obvious if you have from the very beginning, you're like, we have blog posts and we have another model that's very similar. Like maybe we'll just make them the same thing from the beginning. But if you don't have that and it becomes a thing you discover later on, then yeah, it's a bigger thing.
Yeah. I feel like at this point in this exact moment, they should have just been one table with a polymorphic association on it. But I know that we're actively architecting with the knowledge that there will be more types of these types of records. So, and we're not entirely sure what all attributes are going to need to be on them. Like they're obviously going to share a few core like attributes, but we're not sure. And so we are architecting for the future. And for that reason, I think we did make a good decision not to make it just one table, but right now it hurts.
Yeah, that's why I keep telling you guys, you just need to make one table for all your models and one JSON beacon.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
That's it. You just interact with one model and you're done.
No more microservices. We just have one database and all your apps just query that database.
Yeah. I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, honeybadger.io. One of the things that's really tricky about error monitoring is that when you get an error, it could have come from anywhere. It could have come from a background job or a user doing some weird thing and they have JavaScript turned off. You never know. And so you might get these stack traces, but you might not know how to debug them. And that is really a pain in the butt. So Honeybadger has a really cool feature called Breadcrumbs. And you can integrate their client-side and server-side libraries so that you can track what was going on when an error occurred. So for example, you have a front end, it has a button to go sign up, your user clicks that and it makes a post request to your API, and your API has a failure response, and then your JavaScript has an error because, well, something went wrong on the back end. Well, what's really cool is that you're able to track all of that with Honeybadger and see the steps that actually happened in the browser and the server side. So you can go replicate those steps and try it yourself and actually replicate those errors and actually solve the bugs. And that is super cool because if you're just trying to look at the stack trace and you don't know what happened that led to that, it's really tough. So Honeybadger can really save you a bunch of time. I think that is one of my favorite features that they offer. And, you know, like we've said before, they have check-in monitoring. So if you've got cron jobs or like regular scheduled background jobs or anything like that, you can have those check in with Honeybadger and make sure that they're running. So you can feel confident that, yes, your cron jobs actually are running. So that's it. I just wanted to give them a shout out. We love Honeybadger and they've been a long, long time supporter of everyone in the Rails community, and they will continue to be. So check them out. They've got a generous free tier. There's really no reason not to use them.
I did have to write a pretty gnarly JSONB data migration this week because we have a JSONB column that has nested JSON. So like key, more JSON. Mm-hmm. And we needed to introduce a new like default field in there. And so when I wrote my SQL query, I had to use like nested JSONB set methods. I would take all the records from this table and set this value and then take that and apply it as the next argument to JSON B set again. And I did this like four times. Like I was talking to my Jamie about it. He was like, I'm just going to approve this. Surely there's a better way to do this. But
yeah, it gets much harder to query stuff when you're doing nested stuff in the JSON B columns, which is where like the store accessor and things in Rails are like, yeah, we're only going to do the parent level and leave it alone at that because yeah, it would get really gnarly pretty fast. I was just thinking about like even querying the like array columns can be like confusing because sometimes you want to say, does this contain this key or value? And then does it contain both of these or either one of these? And there's a lot of like little complexities just for doing that.
There are some really good JSONB matchers you can use, like just with Postgres, and they're really powerful until you're trying to do like an update and keep the existing JSON. And then it's possible, but it's, I don't know, it's insert any GIF of like someone standing there counting with numbers flying by the screen. It's that's how it feels.
And you want to be careful too to not set the parent key and replace the value. Sometimes you want to actually merge into the value.
Deep merging. And, That's the problem I ran into is because like I tried using the JSONB like concat operator and it was like, sure, we'll concat this by replacing the complete value altogether. So
I got my RailsConf talk approved.
Heck yeah.
It should be publicly announced by the time this episode goes out. So I think it's okay.
Fingers crossed, right?
But yeah, I just submitted using Hotwire and Action Mailbox together.
Cool.
Because Action Mailbox, this is my strategy for talks for RailsConf from now on is just if there's a feature that nobody's talking about, just do a talk on it because you need to draw attention to some of the cool stuff that Rails has like Action Mailbox. Well, and it turns out that Hey World is actually a perfect example of that. Being able to send an email and then it turns into a blog post from Hey is a fantastic, simple idea. And I don't know why. I'm sure that there's some blog software out there that already does this, but it seems pretty obvious. And I don't really know of too many that people aren't really authoring stuff in their email and then having it auto-publish, which is cool. That was kind of what I'm going to end up building in my talk, I think, is just something similar to that, but probably more like a customer support app. So you can send in emails and save them with the probably action text, hopefully, because I forgot all about that. The thing with email is that if you embed an image, it's like a reference to the image and it's like a separate part. And then you've got to go like find and replace those to actually embed the images. And I forgot that I had done a screencast on that with Action Mailbox and Action Text a while back. And I was like, ooh, this is perfect. So the plan is probably to use that and then have the messages show up in real time via Hotwire and publish your reply and have that emailed out. And then you can reply to the email and have that whole conversation thread like you would on GitHub issues or whatever. So I think it'll be a good talk. And that is more than plenty enough to talk about for 45 minutes.
Yeah. You're basically taking a course and distilling it down into a talk.
I have a tangential question related to this for the both of you, actually. You want to create a course. What's your process? Do you like a rigid outline? Do you kind of freeball it? If it's building something, do you build it first? Because I'm actually started making headway, like real headway on this VS Code for Rails course. And now I'm at the point where I want to not just start throwing crap at the wall like where I usually do and just start making notes and random note apps that I'll never open again. And I'm trying to figure out my system. Like, how do I attack this? So I want to know what y'all do and how y'all go about creating courses and content like that.
First of all, your first course isn't going to be about Haml.
I have no response. I don't think people would buy that.
I think we're disappointed that it's not a Haml course.
I mean, I could put out a little Haml course.
I would buy it just for the irony.
Oh, well, if people are going to buy it for the jokes, then
there you go.
I'm just going to, dude, I might as well.
If you put out a Haml course and it was funny, I would pay premium.
He'll buy the $999 version.
No, I'm not getting into that's a sidetrack. I'm not getting into that. My brain just did that meme where the car is like going down the highway and it takes a hard right onto the exit. And the meme is that's just what happened in my brain. So thank you for that.
So to go back to your actual question, I feel like there's kind of two types of courses. There are ones that are like a reference course. And reference may not be a good term for this, but the Advanced Ruby course that I did and the Refactoring Rails course that Ben Ornstein did, those two are like, here's a topic and here's a bunch of random stuff that all is relevant to that, but like they're all independent. So that none of them like lead into each other necessarily. Or if they do the two or three videos or something, it's not like the entire course is
building on each other.
As a creator, those are the ideal courses because you can add and remove stuff and move it around and just record whatever content you want, whatever you want. And that is really nice because if you make a mistake, you just re-record one video instead of 10 or 15. But then, yeah, you have the other category that is like, here, we're going to implement Stripe payments and we have to go create users and add the credit card form and then the backend stuff and the webhooks. And it's a production that has to be watched and created like straight through. So you have to first kind of decide what your topic is and if it requires something like that or not. And if you do need to build it stuff that builds on each other, then like I always build it once or twice before I start recording just so that first time through, I work out the kinks. Second time through, I realize that we should talk about this before we talk about that. Instead, even if I built it a different way, it's just more clear to teach. You realize it if you do it a different way. And then I'll have kind of also memorized a fair bit of what the flow is. So I can record all of that like in a flow. And then the final content is a lot more streamlined and polished, I feel like. So that works good. But for the other type, if you're doing something like VS Code, I could imagine there's quite a bit of different categories of things to talk about, syntax highlighting and autocomplete. And those are kind of independent. And you can just kind of record those as you go and then come back and organize them into whatever makes the most sense. And I like those because you can add and remove content to it at any time and it doesn't really break the course. But if Rails 7 comes out and you got to redo basically the entire course, like on a Stripe payments thing, if Stripe changes or something, that is not as fun to maintain for sure. But that's kind of my thoughts on there.
I have heard y'all for a long time talk about what you just described, and no way am I heading down that path. So I have already made up my mind that I've started like chunking things up and trying to create like natural, basically categories, but making sure the videos are very scoped to a particular thing. So like maybe a video, and I kind of am planning on having a lot of short videos as opposed to a bunch of long ones. And that way, what my current thought process is maybe one video is on one extension or, yeah. And also having like making it so that you can like choose which ones you go through. If you don't need to know anything about Docker or remote SSH connections, then you can completely skip those sections, right?
Yeah.
So my hope is to create it very modular, not building on top of it necessarily. And it, even if it does, some of it does build on top of it, it won't be much. It won't be much to be like, oh yeah, so we're going to make this change now to our settings that we need to make now. Like that's not a big deal.
For me, when I was recording, I did the horrific build an app approach. But even then, like for each one of my videos, I had a bunch of notes. Even before I even sat down to record, I went through and kind of brain dumped. It was a loose order, but it was like, these are the things I want to cover and edge cases I might have to account for. And that was really helpful 3 weeks later when I came back to record that video, because I wouldn't have thought of half that stuff. But there were some videos I didn't even think about recording like till towards the end of the course. And those I just, what I was saying is I couldn't prepare for all of it, but the parts I could prepare for, it was really helpful for future me.
Well, here's a question I have for you specifically, because I know it's not like the most economical choice, but I just want to do it. I want to like use Podia just to use it. Like if anything else, I like just want to try it, mostly so I can annoy you with bugs and stuff, I guess, or yeah. Lack thereof.
Podia.com/support.
Yeah. Jason Charns at, wait, what? No, I actually just want to use the app and it's not like the most economical for me, but I don't care because I just want to try it.
Until you start making those sales, then it's...
Right. It's like a monthly subscription, right? Honestly, I don't care. I'm willing to pay it. So now I'm like at the point where I can start putting up a rough topic outline and I'm ready to start kind of building like an email list and I have a domain and I'm ready to put the site online. Is now the time that I register for Podia or do I put my own site up and collect my emails? And then when I'm ready to launch, that's when I put it all in Podia.
It's easier to adopt Podia from the beginning of the process. It's not impossible to import your subscribers, things like that. But it was beneficial for me when I was ready to like announce, okay, this is the thing I'm doing. I created the course in Podia, even though it had no content. I just said, this is a pre-launch. So we'll automatically like show like pre-launch email forms for that. Mm-hmm. And so I could go ahead and build out how I wanted the sales page to look and show that to the world. And then that was cool because I also used it to keep up with my progress. As I finished like a few videos, I would go ahead and upload them to Podia, even though you couldn't buy the course yet. It would start filling out the table of contents and stuff as I went. So it may be more difficult for you if you were like, I'm going to announce my course. It's going to take me a year to launch. But if you're like, hey, I'm going to start recording videos next couple of months. If you got the cheese, I would just go ahead and do it.
Podia will like, I can send emails through it. I kind of assume, right? And build like a list on there. Dope.
Yeah. We have a couple of different tools for that. You can build like an email newsletter just like for your site. You can scope those newsletters, the list you build to like people who buy your products or sign up for your pre-launch list. And then you can send out broadcast emails, just one-off emails to anybody in your list. Or we also do like campaigns. So you could be like, if somebody buys this product, I want to email them for the next week. Little tidbits. Right. Like we have stuff like that. So
dope. I mean, because that's basically the reason why I want to use Podia. I want to use the site builder, honestly, because I just want to see it. I want to see how it works. I want to touch it. I want to feel it. But also because I know if I use Podia, all the minutia that I am most likely to get stuck down in will not be an issue. I can build my site with the site builder. I don't have to like trip over like what email provider I'm using because I hate all of them, honestly. And all these decisions, I feel like just go away. And I feel like that in itself is worth the price because all of a sudden, all of these blockers to me not launching are gone. So I'm way more likely to launch it.
Obviously, I'm hella biased, but I enjoyed launching my course on Podia. I sent all my emails to people out through there. I just connected to my Stripe account, was able to get paid, did coupons. I have a couple of affiliates. You use an affiliate link. I think I owe you money. But
I don't want your money. You can totally keep that.
But there's stuff like that. Like, I don't know. The all-in-one part of it is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I want. Because those little things, that's where I'm going to get stuck.
Yeah.
And if they're gone, problem solved. Then I can just write. I feel like it will just let me focus on actually making the content.
I like it. I'd be glad to show you around sometime if you want to. You also get a free trial. So.
Oh, dope. Yeah.
It's going to be worth it. I think the like being able to post your launch page and collect emails and then talk to people about what they want to see in the course and stuff and like what they're currently doing so you can figure out how to tailor your course to those people.
Right.
You know, it'll be a cost for a while until you start selling your course, but it'll pay for itself. It'll allow you to do a better job and focus on the content and not the like, oh, I got to like hook up ConvertKit to Zapier to blah, blah, blah. And then I don't have affiliate links and whatever else. Like you get everything with Podia and it's just worth it. Saves you that time to work on what you actually should be doing. And we always have the tendency to like, oh, it'd be fun to go build the landing page or whatever. And
Yeah. Yeah. And I know I'm like that. So I'm like, honestly, I'm like more excited to try Podia than to make this course.
I also feel like, ashamed. For me personally, it's always good to like actually put money down and pay for something like Podia. And I know every month that goes by, I lose that money if I don't use it. So that was like a good one with like ConvertKit. ConvertKit's expensive. And so every month that went by and I was like, I need to set up like automations and stuff for somebody who joins the mailing list and whatever. I like finally did it. And it was like, now it's worth it. But every moment up until then, I was like feeling guilty. Like I need to go use the software I'm paying for. Sometimes that's good motivation.
Well, I would love a tour sometimes, Jason. I'm excited. So I guess if you're listening to this and you want something out of a VS Code course for Rails, you should let me know. I think I'm in a place already where I could start recording because I've been actively working and thinking about this. I actually gave like a talk, just like a little lunch and learn talk type deal to work today. I feel like I'm in a really good place with the content. I could definitely sell it. I'm ready to like make it happen. So if you want something like this, let me know what you want out of it. Some issues you have that you'd like to see fixed. I actually started making like some of my own extensions the other night.
I think that's cool. As a VS Code user, I would love to see something tailored towards Ruby developers. Because I mean, there's all kinds of VS Code tutorials and courses out there, but
they're all the same 10 plugins.
Yeah. And like the Ruby plugins, we're pretty limited to them, period. There's just not a ton, but there are options. And so it helps to kind of know which ones other people use and how they configure them and things like that.
Well, the configuring part is where the meat is because I think we have everything we need. It's just, how do I configure this? Because someone the other day was like, oh, well, you can't just automatically run a test. I'm like, yeah, you can. It's called your tasks file. You don't need an extension for that. And they're like, oh, what about blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you can recreate like all these. I've got the debugger working on at work. That's pretty sick. So yeah, I'm excited.
See, I would love to know how to use the debugger.
I can debug.
I may actually hit you up this weekend because I would love to know that.
I would be happy to show you.
Report it and make it a lesson.
Well, I need to jet, so.
All right, Benny.
See ya.
Bye.
Later.